Hello, everyone. This is Mike from West Coast Project. Today's episode is a review of Season 2, Episode 8 of Breaking Bad, where we are introduced to Saul. Saul was in a lot of the episodes in this series, although he has not been in any episodes yet up to Season 2, Episode 8. Season 1 was 7 episodes, and all the others except for Season 5 were 13. Well, Season 5, of course, was broken into 2 seasons of 8 episodes each and split in half. So in Season 2, Episode 8, we are introduced to Saul. He's in every episode except for five episodes. He's in every single episode after this in the entire series. So it's pretty cool that we get introduced to Saul, and then we see a lot of him after this. So I really like Saul. I like the comedy mixed with criminal defense strategy that he offers. I would say it's probably 80% comedy and 20% strategy. And that strategy is really, really good strategy. We're going to see Saul's really a very capable lawyer. So if the series Better Call Saul stays with that 80% formula, that ratio, I think it'll be pretty good. I think it's a palatable mixture of comedy and strategy that keeps it all interesting. The strategy Saul uses in this episode leads us down several important plot points that we see later on in the series that are very valuable, and we'll go through it. So basically, the scene in the first part of this episode that starts out the whole thing is Badger. Badger is sitting on a park bench, or a bus bench, I guess, with one of Saul's ads. Badger, of course, and Skinny Pete and Combo are the dealers for Jesse in this distribution phase of their meth operation. So Badger's trying to sell some meth to this guy. He looks like a kid, just looks like a street kid, you know, trying to buy some meth. He's trying to buy a teenth of meth for $175. And a teenth is slang for 16th of an ounce. So this stuff's going for $175 for a 16th of an ounce. And it's Badger and this kid who's looks like a street kid, but he's really a sting cop. And they go through a little comedic bit where they look for this proof. Badger's looking for this proof that this guy's just a regular customer and not under a sting or operating a sting. Badger's curiously suspicious of this guy. He points out that there's a couple vans that look suspicious, a flower van, another brown van, which actually somewhat comedically become the two vans that pull up on him when the sting is executed on Badger. So Badger's had all these warnings and doesn't follow them. He doesn't listen to his own instincts and gets caught by this undercover cop in this Albuquerque police sting operation for the teenth of meth that he sells. And of course, this crime sets all the wheels in motion for us to meet Saul, and we do so very shortly hereafter.
A good job until my boss accused me of stealing. I better call Saul. I was out partying, minding my own business.
You are under arrest.
I better call Saul. Hi, I'm Saul Goodman. Did you know that you have rights? The Constitution says you do. And so do I. I believe that until proven guilty, every man, woman, and child in this country is innocent. And that's why I fight for you, Albuquerque!
Better call Saul. Saul Goodman, Attorney Law, 505-164-CALL. That's 505-164-CALL.
So that little commercial for Saul is being played on a television in Jesse's apartment. And this is another interesting thing in doing these review scenes of Breaking Bad. We know all the way back to Season 2, this is Jesse's apartment next to Jane and Jane's house, Jane's father's house, the duplex where she's living in one and renting the other side. Jesse and Jane are still together. Jane's obviously still alive, and Jesse has just moved in. He's got the flat screen TV, but really nothing else. He has the two lawn chairs, and he and Jane are laying on looks like a couple sleeping bags on the floor just watching television. And we see Saul's commercial. So looking back, it's just mind-bending to review some of this stuff. It is spoiler full. So again, if you're listening to this and you haven't watched this series and you don't want to be spoiled, you really need to stop listening, because there's no way to talk about this without having some conversation about the things that we already know or the things I already know. But Jesse's trying to decide whether or not he should smoke some pot. And at that point, Jane seems a little bit standoffish to Jesse. We know that she was at first when she first met him and he was trying to rent the place. But, you know, they're together now watching this show at night, laying on the floor. And they're kind of a couple, or, you know, on their way to becoming a couple. And yet she's a little standoffish when he suggests smoking pot. And we learn why. She shows him her 18-month sobriety chip. So we learn that Jane, at this point, Jane's had some problems, and she's working on them, and she's reached a pretty successful stage of recovery, you know, if it's true that she's gone these 18 months sober. But she flips him this chip, and he sees this new side of Jane. And at first, when she was first being standoffish, it looked like she was just the Jane that we had first been introduced to, that maybe she's just, you know, not that close to Jesse. But as she leaves with a teasingly playful, "Hey, that screen's really badass, that television screen." So we know Jane's really starting to like Jesse, and they're together. They're starting to become a pretty strong couple, or the beginning of at least of, you know, a flirtatious romance. Next, we see another flashback that reminded me of how cool the scene was, or the series was, as I first started to watch it. It was the time lapse. We go from the nighttime sky into the morning sky, these cool time lapse and scenes that are just beautiful photography that this series had used. And we emerge into Walt and Skyler having breakfast. And again, knowing what happens at the end, it's interesting to see Walt and Skyler enjoying breakfast together. It looks like it's a Saturday morning. Skyler's going into work at Beneke, and she's still working at Beneke. She's dressed up, and she's pregnant, so she hasn't had her baby yet. She's pregnant. So all these flashbacks are really interesting, and it's just cool to look back and see them at these more innocent stages of their development in the series. But Skyler's going into work. Walt's just casually dressed in his tennis shoes, and he's having a cup of coffee. And after Skyler leaves, Walt gets a call. Or actually, the phone rings, and it's an incoming call that Walt screens. He just lets it go through the answering machine. And it's Marie being worried about Hank. And at this point in the series, Hank has just returned from that tortoise exploding episode in Juarez, where the cartel had put the DEA welcomes you on the tortoise and sent it into the DEA and Mexican officials. And it blew up and hurt a bunch of people and killed a few people. And Hank had survived that. Essentially because he was afraid and backed by the vehicle. He had been away from the explosion, so he survived it. He gets sent home. So anyway, we're back to this phone call that Walt overhears being screened through the phone machine, and it's Marie. So he picks up the phone, and Marie tells him that Hank's having a problem, and Walt goes over to talk to Hank. So again, it's a Saturday morning, and Walt gets over to the Schrader household, and Marie lets him in back into the bedroom, and Hank's still in bed. He's still not able to even get up in the morning on a Saturday, probably late morning. He's just staying in bed. He's kind of cowering in bed, and Hank and Walt have a little talk. We find out that Hank's been sent home by the SAC, the agent in charge, and he's not sure if it's being sent home for good or if it's what, but it's in TBD status. So Hank and Walt begin to have a conversation that I remember back at this as being one of my favorite episodes, or being one of my favorite scenes at the time. It's basically Walt being finally able to man up and be helpful to someone versus always being a victim to everything and everyone and needing everyone to help him. He finally stands up and offers something valuable to Hank. He does it after Hank tries to prevent it from happening. Hank kind of says that they have this experiential overlap, or that they lack experiential overlap. Let's take a quick listen to it.
You know, the things I deal with, you and me don't have much of what you might call an experiential overlap.
What if I told you we do? I have spent my whole life scared, frightened of things that could happen, might not happen. 50 years I spent like that. Finding myself awake at 3 a.m. But you know what? Ever since my diagnosis, I sleep just fine.
Okay.
And I came to realize it's that fear that's the worst of it. That's the real enemy. So, get up. Get out in the real world. And you kick that bastard as hard as you can, right in the teeth.
I really like that scene of Walt isolating fear as the prime problem. And, you know, that's kind of the driving force behind Walt in this whole change, this series, really, is his ability to face fear and fight it back down in some of the worst ways that he could choose to, but it's actually him overcoming fear, I think, that drives this series. Next, we see Walt and Jesse using a money counter, and they're counting out $10,000. They're counting out one of the very first delivery, the results of one of the very first cooks, the sales proceeds, and splitting it all up, and Walt realizes that he does a little math and realizes they're a little short, and they figure it out that Badger hasn't called in for a day or two, and they haven't collected his sales proceeds. So Walt tells Jesse to get on it, and we soon learn from Jesse checking out what's going on with Badger. He calls Combo, the other guy in the dealer network, that Badger's been arrested, and this arrest leads us to Saul. We're going to see Saul coming up here. So one other cool thing I noticed about Jesse, he's still in his yellow stage. He's wearing a lot of garishly goofy-looking yellow hip-hoppy stuff. He's got the wool cap. It looks like it's summery weather or warm weather, but Jesse's got this hip-hop skateboard yellow and just looks goofy and amateurish. So knowing what happens with Jesse, and he almost looks innocent compared to what happens to him later on in the series, and I guess in a way he is. So we're going to meet Saul because of this problem that Badger's has encountered. But before we meet Saul, we see Hank on his way back into the office. Looks like his little talk with Walt has pepped him up a little bit, and he's on his way back into work after the whole El Paso deal, but he has one of his panic attacks, and I don't remember if we saw panic attacks yet in the series at this point. Again, we're almost near the end of season two, episode eight. We're almost near the end of a full second season. I don't remember seeing Hank having had a panic attack before this, but he's in the elevator and he's kind of suffers this weird little, you know, sweats, and he's shaking, and he has to kind of lean up against the wall. He's having a panic attack. But he kind of overcomes it. He backs it down and bluffs his way into the office with his loud Hank, the typical Hank that we're used to seeing. And we see that he learns from Gomez that blue meth is all over ABQ at this point. Over at the police station, we see the cop, the undercover guy that had set Badger up, is now dressed up in his non-undercover clothes, his suit. Basically, he's talking to Badger, trying to get him to reveal some stuff and talk and say things he probably shouldn't be saying to kind of catch him and reveal some facts about the case. And so then we see Saul come in.
If you just tell me who your supplier is, I think this can end very well for you.
What are you doing, detective? What are you doing talking to my client without me present? You sneaky Pete. Which is which? What did the academy hire you right out of the womb? You guys get younger every... What'd you say to Babyface, huh? Didn't you say anything stupid? By anything stupid, I mean anything at all. I look at you, mouth open, vocal cords of Twitter. We'll talk about it later. Right now, you out. 10 minutes ago. Go on. There are laws, detective. Have your kindergarten teacher read them to you, right? Go grab a juice box. Have a nap. Go on.
Yeah, Saul does not miss the comedic bit here. He picks on this detective who is a really slight, slender-looking, baby-faced cop and tells him, he shuts it down and tells him to leave the room. Badger has some trouble to get himself out of at this point. But how did Saul get there? This is a mystery to me. He's not a public defender. He is very resourceful, so maybe he has some deal set up with the police department in that he's the first one that they call when they have somebody in need of a public defender, or he has some insider person at the police department calling him whenever there's somebody in trouble for some sort of crime at X level that requires defense. But I don't know how Saul got there because he's not hired yet by Badger. He's not hired yet by Walt and Jesse. It's a little bit of a mystery. But we see Saul and, of course, his stream of clever lines and jokes that we come to know and love in his tenure in the whole rest of the series. It's nonstop. I think it's like 80-20%, 80% comedy, 20% defense strategy. But his first comments to Badger are mistaken because he's made a mistake and crossed his files up, and he thinks he's there for a public masturbation case. And they begin the relationship, but not until a money order of $4,650 is cut to Saul's company, Ice Station Zebra Associates. So we see Saul's really a goof, but he knows his stuff, and he's really eminently capable. He's basically running his clients out of home base where his secretary, Francesca, is setting up his schedule. You'll remember Francesca, if you've seen the series, the secretary he's always flirting with. But she's setting up his schedule, even down to the point of the granular level of telling him which pills to take as he's walking up to the water fountain. So on the way in that hallway by the water fountain, Saul passes Hank and Gomi and the undercover cop. And Hank reels off a few sophomoric insults that, you know, he's making fun of Saul's commercials and just kind of punking him a little bit. And Saul's there right back. He asks Hank if his mom is still offering the 2-for-1 discount. So it's this high school wordplay, but it gives us this insight that Saul deduces the DEA on an undercover street bust for drugs, that something bigger is underfoot because of the DEA and the undercover bust. And, you know, it's just more than a simple petty drug crime. And that puts Saul's suspicions up. So he's really using that 20% criminal savvy that he has to see a little bit more into this than what's, you know, just showing up on the surface. So next we see Walt and Jesse pulling up to Saul's office in the strip mall. And it's got that iconic vinyl blow-up Lady Liberty on the roof of the office. And Walt is very reluctant, but Jesse kind of sells Saul on Walt. Says that Emilio had used Saul twice. Emilio's the guy who got busted with Jesse in the very first scene on the DEA run that Walt attended. But Emilio has used Saul and got him off. Saul's got him off both times. And that when you need a problem solved, you want a criminal lawyer. And so Walt and Jesse argue about going inside. Neither wants to be seen in this place. So they flip for it, and we jump cut to the inside of Saul's office. And in the office waiting room, this waiting room is just a lost souls collection of misfits. Screaming kids everywhere, thugs pacing around. And then we see Walt in his New Mexico Isotopes ball cap and sunglasses. So I guess he's the one that's lost the flip. He has to go in. And he's there as Mr. Mayhew. And we soon see him get called into Saul's inner office which we get to see many times in the future in the rest of the series. It's this mini office with the fake pillars and the Constitution wallpaper. And because of Walt's cheesy disguise, Saul kids him about looking like D.B. Cooper. And he actually does look like D.B. Cooper from the news, print news stories of D.B. Cooper. But Saul asks if Mayhew is English or Irish, and Walt answers Irish, and Saul admits that he's Irish too. His last name is really McGill, which we're going to see in the new Better Call Saul series. His name is McGill. But he says that he uses his Jewish name for the homeboys, and whatever that means. I guess he gets clientele based on being part of Jewish people hiring him for being a better lawyer because he's Jewish. But Walt's version of Mayhew is that he's the uncle of Badger, and Walt goes in there with that disguise. So Saul claims everything's okay, but since the DEA is involved, it's going to come down to time served in probation, and that all Badger has to do is reveal his source. And Walt, this is news to Walt that the DEA is involved, so he's obviously concerned about this, being a brother-in-law of a DEA agent and knowing that Hank is on the lookout for blue meth and Heisenberg and everything. So it's pretty much if Badger reveals his source, Badger's going to be off relatively easy. But of course, Walt doesn't want this and tells Saul that they need to review their options. So Saul says, you got two options. Number one, Badger has two options. Take the deal, number one. Or number two, Badger goes to the pen and gets his rectum resized. So it's pretty clear to Saul, and Walt has to sway him into not talking. We learn that Brandon hasn't said anything yet, though. Brandon is Badger. Badger hasn't said anything to anyone yet. And but Saul's job is to convince him to get off on the lesser charge. So he's going to get him to talk and set everything right with the world. And Walt needs to sway Saul from doing this. So Walt has a bit of a coughing fit, which we'll see is important later, and offers Saul $10,000 to throw the case and make sure that there's no talking to the DEA. This whole thing of Saul wanting to do his job is actually a pretty big problem for Walt and Jesse. And so they discuss this in the car back outside in the parking lot outside the strip mall with Saul's office. It looks like at first Saul isn't going to take that bribe to counsel Badger to keep quiet. He's going to do his job as an attorney and try to get him off. So that's the problem Walt and Jesse have. They can't have Badger telling what he knows to the DEA. So we jump cut to the same location, but it's now the evening. Saul's leaving the office in the dark parking lot, getting into his lawyer up license plate car, that classic lawyer up license plate on his Cadillac. And we jump to a scene in the desert, and Saul's perched on the edge of a hole, and Walt and Jesse are standing over him in ski masks, kind of holding him at gunpoint, and they tell him they're associates with the guy with the $10,000 offer and tell Saul, you're going to give Badger advice, but no DEA deals. And if you do that, if he talks, you're dead. So this really confuses Saul because he's the lawyer of the guy, not the guy. So he kind of asks them, you know, why don't you just shoot the guy, kill the guy if you don't want anyone to talk? But at this point, Walt begins to cough, and Saul IDs him as the Mr. Mayhew from earlier in the day. And here's where Saul becomes Walt and Jesse's attorney. He convinces them to give them each a dollar to preserve the attorney-client privilege. Again, another strategic little side of Saul that's funny, but it's actually important. And this is the beginning of their relationship. So that comedy mixed with legal strategy is brilliant. You know, their secrets are now going to be officially secured because they have entered into this attorney-client privilege situation with Saul. Also, interestingly, at this point, Saul makes a joke about you know, whether or not prison shanking is totally off the table. And Walt looks over at Jesse, like, questioningly, like, maybe it isn't such a bad idea. And Jesse just shouts, there's going to be no shanking. And it's funny at the time, but as we know into the future, what we do know, it's somewhat rather ominous that Walt has this idea kind of in the back of his mind. But they leave this scene with the strategy that somebody's going to prison. It's just a matter of who. Now, I like how we see the order of these scenes where we don't see them discussing their strategy yet. We just kind of see this strategy being enacted. Because next we see Hank, Gomi, Badger, and Saul are all in an interview room, and they're sort of outlining the deal. The deal is Badger's going to give up the source, get the lightened sentence, and that guy is Heisenberg. So they get a description from Badger of what Heisenberg looks like. And after this, we see a new scene in Saul's office with Saul, Walt, and Jesse, and we see them outlining the strategy. And that strategy is that the guy going to prison isn't going to be the real Heisenberg. He's going to be this guy, James Edward Kilkelly, who is a criminal with a lifelong string of crimes, so much so that his nickname is Jimmy In and Out, and he has spent 44 of his 58 years in jails. And for a price, he'll go to prison for you. He's actually more comfortable inside prison than outside. So Saul knows this guy, and he will set this guy up as Heisenberg, and this guy Heisenberg will get 8 years, and Saul thinks he can even reduce that somewhat by some of the other facts related to the crime. But the price for getting this stand-in Heisenberg guy is $80,000 and a pound of meth, and of that $80,000, $50,000 goes to Saul. So we see him entrepreneurially generating another stream of income, and 50 goes to Saul, 30 goes to Jimmy In and Out, and I guess the pound of meth is the meth that they need to actually pull off the ruse, the transfer of the meth. I don't think Saul gets that and sells it. I think it's part of this transaction, this phony transaction. So, but we do see this side of Saul where he gets another stream of money coming in just by setting up this deal. And he's working both ends of his clientele pretty prosperously here. So Jesse and Walt give Saul a big bag of cash to seal this deal. It's $80,000, and it's the rolled-up cash, cash rolled up with rubber bands. So we go on to the next few scenes, and it's this interesting transaction of how this fake deal goes down. It's Badger, Jimmy In and Out, and a stranger on these bus benches. The same bench that Badger got caught with the undercover guy. Walt and Jesse are there in one car. Gomi and Hank and the undercover detective with his camera watching are there in another car. But there's a problem in that there's a mix-up. Badger tries to make the drug deal with the wrong bald guy's third guy shows up, and not Jimmy In and Out on the wrong bench. So Walt and Jesse have to correct this, and so they drop Jesse off, and Walt blocks the view of Hank and his team with his car while Jesse tells Badger to go to the other guy in the other bench. But anyway, they get it all straightened out. Jimmy's arrested, and everything's great. Although that scene does kind of end with a very, very skeptical-looking Hank kind of viewing this whole thing as if there's something squirrely about it. Jesse comes home, and he's got a new mattress leaning up against the wall. Jane has let some delivery guys in, and she and Jesse try out the new mattress. So we kind of see them again. They're getting closer and closer, and they're blossoming into this relationship. And we come down to the kind of the final scene. Walt is coughing as he's grading papers in his classroom, and Saul comes into the school to see him. And Walt's pretty shocked that Saul's made it into his school and found him. But Saul makes a pretty good point in that Walt is very easy to find. He had this private eye find him after just a couple days' work or a couple hours' work. And Saul has a new deal for these guys, that he identifies that Walt and Jesse are good producers of product, but really poor criminals, and Saul can help them with that. He identifies their need for money laundering, and he just sees these opportunities in the situation, and he provides them with the analogy of the Godfather, in that he can be the new Tom Hagen for the Fredo that Walt is. Walt's the poor criminal Fredo, and Saul can become the new consigliere for him and advise him on how to run his criminal operation more effectively, and leaves us with that ultimate statement that if you want to make more money and keep the money you make, you better call Saul. And that's how this episode ends. The episode was really cool meeting Saul, and it was also, like I said, pretty cool to take a little time capsule back in and see these guys at more innocent points in their criminal careers. And in the relationships, Jesse's with Jane and Walt's with Skyler and all of it. It's just interesting. Combo's still alive. Jane's still alive. Again, sorry for the spoilers, but if you've made it this far without shutting down, then you know what you're into. There's going to be some spoilers. So that's it for this first flashback review of Better Call Saul. This is season 2, episode 8. And we'll cover a few more of the episodes that Saul was in that are important to us discovering what Saul's role is in all this and what his role might be in the new TV series, Better Call Saul. If you can, drop us a comment on iTunes or on Stitcher. And if you want to leave a comment or connect with us for something that we might want to review on the podcast, you can connect with us directly at Scathing Tweets is our Twitter, at Scathing Tweets, or send us an email at West Coast Project. You can see our email address and our links there for the TV shows that we cover, or just send an email directly to support at West Coast Project, and do that or visit our Facebook page, Facebook/West Coast Project. Thanks again, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon.